this was my identity.
Nobody talks about how freaking hard it is to be a dentist. What most people talk about is how this affects the patient. What nobody talks about is how this affects us. Dentistry is ready for this. Now is really the time. Welcome back to Wellness and Dentistry. Today's going to be a great episode. We're going to be talking about setting expectations when there may be complications. Ooh, that's such a scary topic for many people. I am one of your hosts, Dr. Kyle Stanley. I'm a dentist, tech entrepreneur, speaker, and researcher, and I'm joined by your other co-host and my good friend, Dr. Martin Mendelson. He is a disabled dentist, coach, speaker, and thought leader, and an author. And together, we've helped thousands of dental professionals pursue wellness in dentistry. And we're going to be talking about this subject of setting expectations for complications. If you're interested in learning more about this, I actually created a course because so many people were asking me to create one for this. It's the price of a few tacos. You can just go to complicationcompliancemethod.com and get that there, or you can DM me on Instagram. Martin, hello.
Hello, how are you?
Hello, good. Where do you go with this topic? This is a topic that really eats at a lot of dentists.
Oh, yeah.
Brings us down.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can probably go into identity and that kind of topic today as well. But what comes to your mind when you think about setting expectations for complications?
So it's all about reducing variables, being able to communicate so that and do it properly so that if something goes wrong, you have something to go back to. And I think that's some of the key, that is the key, because in my clinical career as well as my own personal experience in dentistry that I know we'll get to, understanding or setting the expectations of understanding of what can happen when there are complications, and you do it in a good way and you document it and so forth, it takes a lot of the stress out of dealing with it. It doesn't take the empathy or feeling bad about it, because nobody wants to have a complication. But mixed with those feelings, I think all of us also end up having a feeling of fear. Somebody gonna sue me, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Having a protocol like you talk about in your course really helps to alleviate a lot of that, because you're setting yourself up for better communication leading to success from the very beginning.
Yeah, I think where people go wrong here, and when I say people, I really mean where I went wrong at first and then learned that I wasn't the only one. Is that they kind of think that if you talk to patients about complications, they're not going to trust you and your case acceptance may go down. And I'm here to tell you, yes, your case acceptance may go down, but those are probably the patients that you don't want to treat anyways.
Amen.
Because let's talk about this. When you think of how many complications do we have in dentistry, it's low. It's low. Think of every time you prepped a crown and the amount of time you had to send it back to the lab. I mean, maybe 5%.
Yep.
Right? 1 out of 20, the contacts open, the margins open, the occlusion's high, the shade's off, whatever. When you talk about implants, you know, we have a very long, decades and decades of studies showing implant rates. They're pretty darn good. They're in the mid to high 90s over 10 years. I mean, pretty darn high. So you're thinking about complications as a few percentage points.
Yeah.
And I think that is where we can get in trouble, because it's like, well, gosh, if it's 3%, why talk to every single patient about this? And my answer is, when I think back about the patients that drove me crazy, that I stayed up all night, that I cried about, that I talked to my wife about, that I called my brother and my dad, it was that 2%.
Oh, amen. Well, not to mention the fact, if you can figure out what that 2 to 3% is, then you should be buying a lottery ticket and not be practicing dentistry. Like, come on, right? You know, and the truth of the matter is, another example, we talked about a couple examples that we'll get to, but another one that occurred to me that I've heard socially, when either people know I'm a dentist or they hear about I'm a dentist, You go into many specialist offices for treatment, and they will do informed consent about local anesthesia. Many general practitioners don't. And I've heard socially, time after time, and I was guilty of this too. So I'm not pointing fingers. I'm also looking in a mirror. We didn't go through that every single time. And then if you put yourself in the patient's shoes, it's like, what do you mean? I've gotten, numb in my mouth a whole bunch of times. Now you're telling me my lip is numb, maybe permanently? Like, what the heck? So I used to have this principle that I used to call the mom principle, when I practiced, which was, if it would be okay for my mom, then it's okay. And if it wouldn't be okay for my mom, it's not okay either.
And
And
you like your
so,
mom, I should say.
yes, I love my
Yeah,
mother. She's
'cause some
93.
people say like, would you do it on your spouse? But they don't like their spouse, right?
Yes. Very good point. But and if it would really bother you that you didn't tell your own mother that you like that this could happen and then it happens, then why are we not telling everybody else? Because 3% still 3%. That's 3 people out of 100. And like I was joking earlier, how the hell are you supposed to know? And so, is it a pain in the neck? Yes, but it becomes a habit like anything else. Like, think about all the things that we do in practice that are so habitual that we just do because we need to do them. Even something as simple as asking permission. It's like, okay, so Mrs. Jones, with your permission, I'm going to go ahead and take a look in your mouth now. Like, so many of us have something like that that's habitual that we do it. Do we even think about doing it now? No, because it becomes a habit. And I would propose that this is no different, right?
Yeah, and I think why I started not talking about complications was because, like most of us, when I started, I looked very young. And so I was worried that if I started talking to, a patient in their 60s and I was 29 or something about a complication, they're going to say, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. Like, I'm not doing treatment here. He's talking about the implant falling out, and I can get infections, and I can get infections in my sinus, and the bone could come out. And what blew me away was, I started talking about complications very heavily after my burnout period, because I realized that that was such a big part that I was lacking, was being forthcoming with expectations. And so I was doing it and said, I'm going to do it to protect myself. But I thought that everyone was not going to like me. Patients were going to leave. No one was going to refer people. And it was the opposite. People trusted me more. They showed my experience. Like, you've done this so many times that you know this and that and that and that. And let's also be very conscious about this. 97% of the time, let's say we're talking 3%. Nothing's gonna happen.
Correct.
So
Correct.
you have to pretend like this is going to happen to this patient every time. And I think the biggest part where people make mistakes is not talking about the financial implications that may be needed later.
No, I agree with that. And one of my first mentors in business once said, knowledge foretells wisdom, knowledge aftertells an excuse. And that fits in this scenario. The thing that I always think of when we talk about this subject wasn't necessarily as much of a complication communication, but a procedural flow communication. So when I was first in practice, for whatever reason, I was in a practice where we did a lot of dentures. And so I'm old enough that, implant retained dentures weren't the big rage those days, but dentures in a day was. And so I had quite a number of patients that would come in not happy with their denture they got in a day. And I would do things the way that at the time, was more traditional denture fabrication, jaw relation records, wax room try-in, teeth try-in, blah, 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 blah. And I got so frustrated over time with patients going, what, I'm not getting my teeth today? That I created basically your guide to getting your new dentures or whatever I called it. And it literally had the steps described in layman's terms. We would both have a copy. We'd pull it out, we'd check it off, we'd celebrate going from one step to the next. And I gotta tell you, did it happen often that people would say, "Oh, I'm not getting my dentures today." It's like, "Oh no. Hey, tell you what, let's go back to a roadmap." Oh, that's what I called it. And I would pull it
Great name
out and
for it too.
immediately, with one exception, immediately those angst questions, frustrate, whatever, they all melted away because we took the time to talk about it to begin with. It's
And
unbelievable.
what I like what you're talking about too is you didn't give it to them to sign, leave the room, they signed it, your assistant collected it, and that's it.
Yeah,
You
no.
had a conversation about it.
Amen.
And that is a big difference because when people are listening to this, they're going to say, well, my patients sign a consent form that says the implant can fail and it says that they could be permanently numb in the nerve. It's different than having a conversation.
Oh,
And
100%.
I would even argue that it's different from your treatment coordinator having the conversation. In my opinion, and people will push back on this, I think the doctor needs to have the conversation with the patient.
There's different schools of thought around it, and honestly, I've seen this talked about for so many years. And the truth of the matter is that there's enough extraneous variables that I can see either way working. But those variables need to be in place. I mean, we don't need to talk about that here, but everybody's practice is set up, slightly differently. And but I do.
I say that kind of from an ivory tower, fee for service,
Yeah.
slow
Exactly. Yeah.
dentistry kind
Yeah.
of
Yeah. Yeah.
practice.
Yeah.
And I felt better when I had the conversation with it
Yeah.
because I feel like the patient listened more.
Yeah. And what I
Now,
would
my
also
time
say,
is expensive.
yeah. Well,
Could I
and what
be
I would,
making more money? For sure. Could I be delegating
sure.
that? Yes. But I felt like once I started doing that, it was like putting money in the bank for the back end. If I did have a complication, the
Sure.
patient would call and things would be different.
Oh
Their
yeah.
reaction would be different.
Yeah. No, I totally see
But
that.
I
I think
encourage you to push back on this because I would like to hear the
I, you know,
other
I
view.
just I, you know, she's since retired, but I know, my good friend Dr. Jay Platt outside Chicago, northern Indiana, he had a treatment coordinator for years, Mo, and Mo was always the one that talked about, the process, the complications, and she was a master at it, and exceedingly professional, exceedingly thorough. Things were backed up with, additional documentation and copies for the patient. And so that's kind of where I was leaning relative to every practice is kind of different because, Jay really set up that experience to support what Mo was doing and, her successors as well. So that's kind of what I meant by that. And that was just kind of that thing. Plus, Jay's been in the community a long time and, really well respected and those kind of things. But,
Yeah, I
and
think when we think about this topic of setting expectations for complication, like your example with the denture isn't necessarily for complication, but what you're doing is
no.
setting the expectation because humans don't like to be surprised in a negative
Exactly.
way, right? In a negative way. Maybe they like to be surprised if
Well,
it's their
and
birthday or they get a new car or something,
well,
but.
they also have a really crappy memory too. Like, let's call it what it is. And so, what I would do, not that you would do this with complications, but this is still relevant. When the patient would come in, I'd be like, "Hey, super excited to see you today. We're on step 3 of 5. Let's see how this goes. I'm super excited to give you another check mark." Like,
You're starting it even before they ask. I love that. See, I used
worked
to,
like a charm.
yeah, no, it's perfect. Before they say, so am I getting my denture today? You start with it and you pull it out and it's visual and they know. And yeah, one thing I talk about in my course, Complication Compliance Method, is patients have so much else on their mind. That conversation you had, or I think the conversation sticks more than them just signing a report that you'd say, here, sign here. And they just sign. Maybe they don't even read it. Now, legally, is it legally binding? I don't really know. I know dentists that have signed consent forms. Something happens, they still get sued.
Well,
They
yeah.
didn't know it was going to happen, right? I mean, one of my dad's best friends is a lawyer, very high level lawyer in LA, and he said, "Sign whatever you want. I can get you out of anything."
Interesting.
You know? So I think a lot of people think they're covered legally, but I'm not even talking about legally. I'm talking more about emotions and payback and that kind of stuff. Because we've all had this patient before. They're the most lovely person. They show up on time, they pay their bills. They're like, "Dr. Mendelsohn, you're the best. I love you." And then a complication happens. Or then the treatment plan changes and they have to pay more. And then they're pissed.
Absolutely.
And so my goal really in life now, but teaching dentists as well, is try to have zero surprises and even set the bar low. So you say, I need to see you, let's say you place an implant or something. I need to see you every 3 months. And in those 3 months, there's going to be an exam. Currently, the fee is this. Expect a 5% increase every year. We're going to have to take radiographs every X amount of time, depending on their, exposure or caries risk or perio. And so you're just being very straight up with them
100%.
and saying things like, "You will have to service this sometime in your life."
It's an extraordinary way to do it. And so, I like to share my own example with everybody listening. So, I have veneers, but I have no posterior restorations. And one fine day, I started getting symptoms. Long story short, vertical fracture on 14.
Virgin tooth.
Virgin tooth.
Crazy. Because
Go
you
to the
hear that on
endodontist.
premolars, right? But virgin
Great,
teeth on,
great endodontist.
holy wow.
Good friend of mine as well. And they treated me like they would treat everybody else. And they went through the consent form. And, truthfully, I forgot. And I honed in on in the consent, it says, look, vertical root fracture, virgin tooth, 50 to 70% failure rate. Wow. Okay. Hope that doesn't happen. Well, guess what happened? It failed.
After how long?
About a year-ish. I remember where I got the CT that because I started getting an abscess on my palate, and I was in my dear friend Dan Murphy's practice, may he rest in peace, and my bestie David took a CT. That's why I remember it was February of 2020 when we discovered it.
Oh,
But
wow.
anyway, so
Let me stop you real quick before we continue the story. At that point, when you saw 50 to 70% failure rate, I want to remind the audience that you could have said, "I'm not going to do the root canal."
Correct. And I thought
And that's
about
what
it.
we need to remember, is that we're giving the patient the
That's a
choice.
really good point. That's an
And they could
excellent
say,
point.
"You know what? I don't want to do the root canal. Let's extract the tooth."
Yeah. That's an
Or,
excellent point.
"I'm going to do nothing about it." You know, like it's up to them.
And so then I go in, I have the tooth removed, bone graft, have the implant placed, and guess what happens? I'm a three percenter. Not only am I a three percenter, i.e., it didn't integrate within the first 10 days, guess what? My brother had the same thing happen. Different arch, different side, same thing, different, same implant company, by the way, really good stuff. Because I asked, what are they
Yeah,
looking
sure.
at?
You know too
And
much.
we both had the same thing happen. And, again, my thought process was these can fail. Am I happy about it failing? Absolutely
Of
not.
course not.
Do I feel like the universe has it in for my old number 14? Yeah, I did. Was I frustrated? Of course I was. But was I mad at anybody other than the universe? The answer is no. And, I want to reiterate that I was reminded of the 50 to 70% failure. I wasn't even thinking about that. I was just like, this hurts. Let's fix this. So,
And you're
it's,
a dentist,
and I'm a
you
dentist,
know?
right? And so I felt bad for my friends because they're like, of course it's you. Of course it is, right? So, I just want to remind everybody how important the communication is. I don't care who you are. And here's another thing that's occurred to me. So, bad example for you, my friend Kyle, because you're such a car guy. But if you're not a car person, think about how much you understood the last time you had a lot wrong with your car. Or if you don't like finances, think about how confused you got the last time you had a meeting with your financial advisor. Like, it's the same damn thing
Yeah.
for our patients. It
One
is.
thing that's interesting about your story is you and your brother both had, I don't even want to use failures, but an implant that didn't integrate.
Yeah.
Now, let's say it's not coincidence,
Yeah.
and you both have genetic predispositions to
Yeah.
having implant failure. Your bone is softer, the blood flow is different, whatever, right?
Yep.
How is that the dentist's fault?
It ain't.
And it is exactly what I talk about with the triangle of blame. And that is
Yep.
this. I used to think that there were two people you could blame. If I did something wrong, I placed the implant too deep, too shallow, too buckle, I prepped too deep, I prepped too shallow, I didn't get the right margin, I packed the cord enough. Yes, I can do something wrong. Or the patient could do something wrong. They can floss the provisional out when I told them not to floss. They can not floss when I told them to floss. They can bite on candy or nuts or grind their teeth or, they can do something wrong too. And I thought it was really these two things. And what's funny is before my burnout, even when the patient did something wrong, I still took it upon myself and I redid it for free and I took my own time and overhead and this and that. The truth is that there's three parts to this. Yes, I can do something wrong. Yes, the patient can do something wrong, but even if me and the patient do everything right, we can still have complications and still need revisions because there's things like genetics, biology, physics, diet, bone structure, muscle thickness, oral microbiome. Some of these things we can't control. And so, in my personal opinion, I don't think we should be financially and just responsible for them in general. But you can't say that to your patient unless you've had the conversation.
I
So
was
you
just
basically
thinking.
need to have the conversation of what I just said, which is like, listen, Mrs. Jones, I'm going to place this implant today. I'm going to do everything that I can. When you walk out of this room, it's up to you and all these other factors that we can't control. So even if you do everything right and I do everything right, we still may have to redo this implant. We still may have to take out the bone graft. And even if in a year it's good, sometime in your life you're going to need the services. You may need to change the crown. The crown may become loose. You may lose bone or tissue on this. We may have to remove this implant altogether. You may lose a tooth next to it. All of that, right? Which sounds kind of doom and gloom. And if you have a patient that says, wait a minute, you mean this doesn't last forever? Oh my gosh, I don't want to do that then. Then you let them go because they do not have realistic expectations. The closer you get with expectations and reality, the closer those come together, the better patient experience you're going to have and the better you're going to feel.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we also got to remember too that for whatever reason we've done ourselves a disservice by, and I'm not saying even currently, but just in the lexicon of dentist patient interactions, the P word permanent, like what a disservice we've done to our for our patients really. And when we've all had this, well, many of us, me included, have had the situation where you have a bruxer, you made them an occlusal guard, and in the case of the story I'm about to share, it was before we knew anything about airway because I'm old. And the guy comes in, if I remember right, it was fabricated by the previous dentist because I kind of came in when somebody retired. And he's like, well, you need to replace this. And I said, sir, it's 2 years old. And he looks at me, goes, yeah, but it wore out. I said, let me ask you a question. Why do you have that? And he said, well, because I'm biting on my teeth. I'm grinding my teeth. I said, and what happens when you grind your teeth? He goes, well, that wears down. I said, So we're putting this in the place. We all know the story. We're putting this in the place. So we wear this down out your teeth. And he still didn't get, he still was insistent that it was, quote, my fault, meaning the practice. And had we had a discussion and or documentation, how cool would it have been to be able to go back to that and go, well, you know, I see back in the chart that there was a discussion with Dr. So and so that this is the reality and blah, blah. Oh, okay. Like, can I say for sure that that guy, as indignant as he was, would have backed off? Of course not. But if I had that, how much of a different conversation would it have been?
It's such a great example, and I've seen this like on Dental Nachos. I think
Yeah.
Paul likes to post something
Yeah.
where it's like, I just got a flat tire and I've only
Yes.
had this car for 2 years, and I can't believe that this company doesn't back up their product. Like, this is such bullshit. And I mean, it's so true, right?
It's
If you
crazy.
drive over a nail, a tire isn't gonna help you. And it's like, if you bite on a walnut and you break the crown or you break your tooth, how is that my fault?
So I'll give you a different example that's actually the antithesis. You probably remember this story because it happened not that long ago. So we decided to take a weekend and we wanted to go to Flagstaff, Arizona. So for those of you who don't know, I live in Phoenix and it's about 2 hours from here. Okay, fine. So there was a backup on the main highway to get there, really the only one. And Google reroutes us to what turns out to be a firebreak road, meaning a dirt road to break fire progression that's not paved with boulders, et cetera. And we made it maybe an eighth of a mile on this road before we realized that Houston, we got a problem. And when we turned around, the car was like bottoming out, like bam. And had our car been damaged, would I have tried to go after Google? I mean, granted, let's face it, they're a huge company, but you get the idea. The answer would have likely been yes. Why? Because we were using their service to guide us on roads that were supposed to be safe when in this case it wasn't. So it's like a completely different example of kind of responsibility on the other party. And although that's not the case in dentistry, if we're not really setting those expectations, how is it any different from the patient's point of view?
And I hear, why I got so into this topic was because it really bothered me when patients had complications. I always did it for free before I had, gone through burnout. And I had to do it for free because I didn't have these conversations. And it always bothered me. And I'm not here just because of the money, but I always felt a little used. I was like, I didn't do anything wrong in this case. Now, there were some times where I did do something wrong and I did do it for free and I felt fine because I needed to fix it, right? But there were times when, I mean, there were cases, because I'm a speaker that I was photographing, I was doing video of, I was like, I'm going to show this at the next Seattle Study Club meeting and, I'm going to be on stage at AACD this year. I'm going to show this. And then it would blow up and fail, but it had nothing to do with me. And sometimes it had nothing to do with the patient either. We were just both baffled, like, okay, you took your antibiotics, you chewed on the other side, your blah, blah, other implants have worked here. Like, I don't know what it is, but I don't think that we as the dentist should be 100% responsible for that.
No.
There's some patients that come in and are like, oh, that's a bummer. Happy to pay for it again.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the majority. Because a lot of people think that things last forever.
Yeah.
But I think we shouldn't be 100% responsible for that. So I would recommend that people start the conversation by talking about complications and get used to that. Do that for a few weeks or even a few months. Then add in the financial portion too. The financial portion is big because let's talk about medicine for a little bit. All right, Martin, I've had some knee issues with jujitsu recently, and I tear my MCL and I go to an orthopedic surgeon, and he or she repairs it. And I'm doing pretty good. But then, like 6 months later, I'm still kind of limping. I don't really have full use of that. When I wiggle my right leg, it still kind of hurts. I go back to them, and he or she says, "Oh, yeah, there's like some scar tissue in there. We need to go in there. We need to remove some of that. We need to kind of trim this area of bone that's touching it. We need to do a revision surgery." You think they're doing it for free?
Hell no. And what drives me crazy is that nobody would think they would. But when it comes to us, they look at us differently. I reposted recently on Facebook. This made me so angry. There was a meme from Susie Orman, the financial guru, and she goes, "I never pay full price at the dentist." What kind of horse crap is that? Like,
Now, do you think a lot of that has to do with the medical insurance world?
meaning what?
Like, patients are less likely to pay out of pocket for that specific surgery?
I think so. I think it's twofold. I think it's absolutely that, and also something that none of us can do anything about, the fact that we called it dental insurance when it's not. And so, because of the medical model and the influence of medicine, but by the same token, then you run in all these, then you hear about and or know of people that have six figures of medical debt for various reasons. And so it's a complicated thing. And unfortunately, historically, we made our own bed. Now we're lying in it because we created dental quote unquote insurance, and we keep calling it insurance. And it's at least from a perception perspective, we're never going to change that, but we
Yeah,
can change the
I think
conversations around it.
what we have to try to do individually that has been very poor for the last 100 years is bring up the value of dentistry, because we don't have the respect that other doctors have, right? We're not real doctors, according to a lot of people, right? And I made this meme that got me in trouble a long time ago, but it's a quote unquote real doctor at the top, and it says real doctor, and they're handing a prescription. And then underneath it, there's a full maxilla that's filleted. There's six implants or sinus lifts, and it says, "Not real doctor." Right. And I think that when you don't have the respect of your patient, they're more likely to expect you to take care of that again.
And the other thing that doesn't help is there's a lot of variability in patient experience, and there's a lot of variability in comprehensiveness of care. And that doesn't help either because, I know all my years at Spear, one of the biggest fears that people had about changing the practice to be more comprehensive is the perception. But Dr. Spear's wonderful philosophy of facially generated treatment planning, of basically sharing what you see, what the benefit, what the consequences of not doing anything are, what the benefits of doing things are, and then let the patient ask you to move forward. It's so simple and so elegant and brilliant. And particularly today, I think it's more important than ever, because as you hear this too, all of us do, you go to a party and they find out you're a dentist, or they remember you're a dentist if they already know you, and they start complaining about the dentist down the block. And 9 times out of 10, we all know instantly that it has nothing to do with clinical stuff. 9 times out of 10, they're just terrible communicators.
Totally.
That's all it is,
Totally. And I it reminds me of this story with my car. As you said, I'm a car guy, and my family's been going to the same car guy for many years, and I drive 40 minutes to go there each way. Now, there is a mechanic 5 minutes from my house. Okay? But I choose to drive 40 minutes. Why? Because of trust. And this guy's expensive. He's not fast. He takes his time. Great work. It's kind of like my practice, right? Expensive, slow, great work. And when I was I was there and I took my friend's car to him because my friend asked me to do it and he was going to work on it. And there was something wrong with the transmission. It was an old 911. And the transmission wasn't going into second gear. And I talked to Doug, my mechanic, and I said, Doug, what do you think what do you think it is? He said, well, it's two things. He said, it could be these bushings. And I go, okay, if you put the new bushings in, what does that cost? He said, it's like $800. I said, okay, well, if you do the bushings and it doesn't work, what would you have to do? And he said, well, then we have to rebuild the transmission. And I said, what does that cost? And he said, $6,000.
Oof.
And so here's the thing. My friend ended up doing it. They tried the bushings, didn't work. But he had the choice. It's just like you in your root canal example. He had the choice at the beginning to say, gosh, this could potentially be $6,000. I may just deal with not going into second gear until I can afford it or whatever. He didn't. He knew what it was going to be. He got into it. He ended up doing it and he ended up actually rebuilding the whole car and spending a lot of money. But it shows why my mechanic, Doug, is in the business that he's in and why he has loyal customers. Because listen, I could have been really pissed off, or my friend, let's say, because it wasn't my car. My friend does the bushings, it doesn't work. He said, I spent $800 and now you're telling me it's $6,000? I had no idea this was going to be this expensive.
And I think you also hit the nail on the head because in the beginning you were saying that you trusted him. And so that's another thing too that I've heard Dr. Speer talk about for so long now, which is this. We think, and the behavioral studies refute this, we think that we have to get to know somebody before they trust us. That's not the case. It's how we communicate with them that creates the trust from minute one. And so, in a maybe a different scenario, they'd be like, oh, well, I don't really know if I needed this $6,000, but you already told me in the beginning you trusted him. So how important is that? It's huge. It's
Yeah, I
absolutely
mean,
huge.
for me, that trust came from years. It did come from years, but it also makes me think of this that I one of my coaches just recently said on one of his podcasts is, charisma comes from the balance of vulnerability and invincibility. And when I heard that, it totally explained how when I started being more vulnerable with my patients, they trusted me more. I became more charismatic. Our patient grew. We got more referrals, which is the opposite of what most people think. If you think you're going to talk to your patients, you're going to talk about how everything's going to fail, the crown's going to come off, the margin's going to be terrible, the shade may not work on the first try. You think, like, God, this is going to kill my practice. And I see this time and time again with people that have taken our courses, is that their practice grows when they become more vulnerable
Oh,
because you
100%.
go from being, I'm this dentist up here. You're this patient that knows nothing down here. I know everything, you know nothing. To we are two humans having a conversation. I happen to have a lot of knowledge in this area, but it doesn't mean I'm perfect.
No.
I've done a lot of it. I know what goes right. I know what goes wrong. Sometimes I can predict it, sometimes I can't. And I tell you, when you are invincible and vulnerable at the same time, wow, that is a powerful combination.
Well, and I also very much believe that people are more intuitive than they realize, and people pick up on sincerity and honesty. Now, is that 100% of the time? Of course not. Nothing is 100% of the time. But when you truly are genuine and you're truly vulnerable, people pick up on that. And if they don't and they're still questioning you, I don't know about you, but that's not the kind of person I want in my practice.
Well,
Period.
that's one of the big mindset shifts you have to make. And I talk about this in my course, Complication Compliance Method, is you have to make that mindset shift that not every patient is right for your practice before you even start implementing this. Because when you start implementing something like this, you will have patients that say, oh, well, I don't, you mean this could fail? Like, I don't
Absolutely.
trust you anymore. Like, they may not trust
Absolutely.
you because the other nine dentists they went to said, oh, yeah, these are great. They last forever. Let your colleagues deal with that. If they tell them that it's going to last forever and they have a, year long or a lifetime warranty. Let them do that.
And the truth of the matter is that at the core, we're all just basically human beings, and everybody's different. And most of my business today is working with dentists, but not all. And I don't want to work with every dentist out there because there are people that I don't click with, right? And I've had individuals where you have a conversation. In fact, one such individual happened to be in town. They're not from Phoenix. And I went down and I met with them. I spent time. I gave them a bunch of options, et cetera, et cetera. Never heard from them again. Now, if that person were to come back, a couple months later, would I work with them? Probably not, unless there was an explanation that made sense. So, there was a phrase that once really spoke to me. It's like, I think this is so funny. Like, stop trying to be liked by everybody. You don't even like everybody.
Oh, I love that. I'm writing that down, Mark. I love that.
It really spoke to me because I thought to myself, wait a minute. I mean, look, everybody has people they like and dislike. Let's just call it what it is. If I'm going to really accept and admit that there's not every human on the planet I really like, then why is it not okay that somebody else doesn't like me? It's got to be okay, because otherwise it's a double standard and the hypocrisy is just ridiculous.
Gosh, that's so good. And that's really helpful for me too, with like the negative comments that I get from Instagram and some when you get to a certain level on social media. I One of my coaches says you should be happy that you're getting hate because that means you've hit a new
Oh,
level.
100%.
If everybody's telling you you're great, that means you're just in this small little cult where everyone's, supporting you. Oh, I love
The
that.
algorithm still hates me, so I haven't gotten to that point yet. So, but I see it all the time, and I see it on all kinds of things on social media. Dentistry, physical appearance, all kinds of other stuff. I've even seen it. So I decided I'm doing this rafting trip with his called the outdoor therapist. And so this guy's name Zach, his dad started these river rafting trips out of Moab, Utah in the 80s. And so now Zach and I think some other siblings, I'm not sure, are part of this business, but Zach is a therapist and I'm super excited. It's all about like identity and purpose. It's gonna be super cool. But even on their feed, I see BS on occasion. And it's so interesting to me.
Well, I think
And
when dentists can make that mindset shift that
yeah.
not every patient that walks through the door is meant to be their patient,
Yeah.
first of all, it's very freeing and it's going to allow you to avoid huge problems. When I think back about the patients that caused me so much grief and made me stay up all night and
Yeah.
not eat and all this kind of stuff, I kind of, on not all of them, but on some of them, I knew at the beginning, like, I didn't really like them.
Yeah.
Not that you
Yeah.
need to like every patient that walks in, but like,
No.
I felt icky around them sometimes too.
Yeah. Yeah, it felt like you needed to take a shower.
And when you can have that mindset shift, it's very freeing. Now, there may be people that are being like, oh, well, that's easy for you to say. You have an established practice. And it's true. At the beginning of your practice, when you've only got three patients that walk in the door, yeah, you should try to probably take care of most people. But eventually you're going to learn that, wow, that wasn't even worth the money. I mean, think about the patient that ends up suing you. Oh my gosh, it was this big $20,000 case, but they sued you for 300 grand. Right? Even from a financial standpoint, like better to be better not make 20K
Yeah,
than
totally.
to, go through all that hell that can happen
Absolutely.
with litigation. I mean, it's the same with team members too. Like people say fire fast, I would say the same thing with patients. Fire
Fire
fast,
fast with
right?
documentation.
Yes, so true. And I learned that the hard way. Ask me how I know.
But I just, at the end of the day, everybody involved in this scenario is human and everybody's gonna interact and react differently. And so It's about protecting yourself, protecting the practice, but let's call it what it is. It's also about doing the right thing, right? And so by doing the right thing, you're getting all these other benefits, or as James Clear would call it in the book Atomic Habits, a lagging indicator. And so have the safeguards against litigation, have the safeguards against difficult conversations just by doing the right thing. Like, that's not a bad way to live, in my opinion.
Some of my final thoughts are setting expectations in all areas of your life is a great thing. I mean, I do with my kids now, I do with my wife now. Like I think I may have told you about this, but I love to set low expectations with people. And there was a time earlier this year that I was taking a CE course. Usually I'm the one giving the CE course, but I was taking a CE course. And my wife texted me later in the day and said, "What time will you be home?" Now, previously, I would say it was ending at 5:30. It was about an hour away. I'll be home at 6:30. No, what I said is, the course is supposed to end at 5:30. So I don't really know, is really what I told her. I said, "I'll text you when I'm leaving so that you know, within an hour." But why do I do that? Because there were times before my burnout when I would say, "Oh, my last patient's at 4. I should be done by 5. So then I should be home around 6." So then, because she was planning dinner or we were going to do something with the kids or whatever. And it didn't happen. Why? I had a complication. A team member wanted to talk to me afterwards. There was the elevator wasn't working, like all this stuff that is out of my control. But she expected me home at that time. And then, she was disappointed or mad or frustrated when I wasn't home. And so it's like this complication compliance method isn't just for dentistry, it's for life.
Oh,
The
100%.
better you can set expectations, the better you can communicate, the better relationships you're going to have. And
Absolutely.
relationships and bad relationships are what causes a lot of problems in dentistry.
Amen. Amen.
So, if you guys are interested, if you've been listening to this, you're like, "Wow, I really want to explore this. I want to have a method, a step-by-step way of doing this." You can go to complicationcompliancemethod.com. Check out my course. Like I said, it's the price of a few tacos in California. We have expensive tacos in California, so it's $47 at the time of this recording. And it's step by step exactly how we do it in my practice and how I completely changed. We've had thousands of dentists take this just in the last year, so it's been really, really exciting. And if you're interested in going even deeper into this, Martin and I have a 2-day transformational workshop. You get 12 CE credits. It's called Lightside Live. It's happening May 9th and 10th at Glidewell Lab in Irvine, California. Just go to wellnessanddentistry.com, go over to our links, and I think it's the first link that's there. You'll see like live workshop and go sign up. And if you're listening to this, let's see, this is happening. Are they still going to have access to this when they're listening to this? Yes, you have 3 days if you're listening to this now, the day it came out, to sign up for the early bird special. You save a few hundred bucks, I think, or $150, something like that.
150.
So, yeah, so make sure you do that. And we will see you on the next episode of Wellness and Dentistry.
Take care.